This is the Media Freak podcast. Yes, that's right. It is the latest, greatest, and newest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs. We're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
Hello.
Spooky from Wavemaker.
Good afternoon.
And Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello.
In today's episode, we question how well advertisers really know their own. We put the Media Freak team to the test to find out. This week's podcast comes from the wonderful new studios of Bauer Media UK, here at the Lantern Building in London. Can I get a
Very fancy.
It's Bauer Media UK's new HQ that brings its audio and publishing businesses together into one central site for the very first time, lighting the way for even greater creativity and collaboration.
I mean, literally next door to us right now, they're making Kiss Radio.
I know.
Like, I walked past it, I was like, yep, big leagues now, folks.
I can't believe it. How do we get here?
It's very fancy.
This isn't for us.
I'm also not entirely sure I could find my way out, so maybe I'll just live here now.
It's me now. Bauer Boots.
I had to smuggle my gin in. Thanks to our friends at Bauer Media for hosting us. More on Bauer later.
Ta very much.
But first, news roundup. In the world of influencers, footballer Ronaldo's content creation venture on YouTube has meant he is the fastest person to reach 1 million subscribers following his new channel launch on YouTube in collaboration with Unscripted. Trade press articles suggest that the star, now termed content creator, may struggle with the strategies required for success on the platform. So what does his gig mean for new brands?
So I've got a bit of an idea on this because it's been kind of, well, I've seen that he's invested $40 million into the development of a new free-to-play football game, which is called UFL. So it's going to go kind of like head-to-head with your EAFC. So in my mind, I'm seeing, is he going to come YouTube gaming? Is he going to start streaming on his YouTube channel behind this game? I'm like, maybe
he's nearly 40 though. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's trying to get in on the kind of the Sidemen vibe, sort of young YouTuber thing.
You wouldn't watch Cristiano play a football game.
I'd like to see Cristiano Ronaldo lose his shit and throw his controller through the window.
Precisely, and he's going to make so much money from that.
Yeah, but will he do it? I don't know. I feel like he's going to be so polished, you know? It will be so stage managed. It won't have that kind of authenticity that people like from those kinds of content creators. Or unless we see the real Ronaldo. I mean, I don't know.
I'd love to see the real Ronaldo.
I think he instantly went, didn't he, for Mr. Beast, who obviously is one of the sort of foremost YouTubers. But it's almost a little disappointing to know that the rivalry he had between Messi was nothing to do with Messi. It was just anyone who's good in front of him. It was anyone who he's so competitive.
Yeah.
There was no love in there. There was no like mano a mano. It was just like, no, you're good, I'm better.
Well, that's all well and good, Charlie, but what does this actually mean for brands? What do we think is actually going to happen because he is now a content creator?
I think that he's probably going to see a lot more interest from, like, you know, if you're a Brazilian media agency and you've got that enormous market and you've got a Portuguese-speaking creator who is of that higher profile, I mean, he's an absolute no-brainer, surely. But I think given the content's like not in English currently and it's really kind of short form and there's a lot of, you know, concerns about how kind of real it will be. Like, I think maybe from a brand standpoint, it will be a kind of watch and wait. Also, let's face it, it's going to cost so much money. He's got all that Saudi back pocket money, you know?
Very good. Well, let's move on. In other influencer news, girl, it's giving a new era for influencer marketing. That's right. Publicis Group has recently announced its acquisition of Influential, the largest influencer marketing company in the world by revenue, apparently. With a network of over 3.5 million creators and proprietary AI-powered tech, the acquisition positions the company at the forefront of the creator economy, as quoted in Forbes. Hannah Mons, EMEA head at Influential, tells us, Devon and I are incredibly excited about becoming part of the Publicis family here in EMEA.
I bet they are. I mean, it's interesting because influencer marketing has been so much of a kind of a Wild West for a while now. And it's kind of been like a bit of a land grab. So a major agency demonstrating a degree of control over it and expertise is going to, it's going to be like that kind of safety net for clients. I mean, also, let's face it, publicists seem to be kind of going around Pac-Manning everything in media right now and sort of swallowing it all up. So,
well, we're not keeping that in. Yeah.
I mean, I've got a say on this because GroupM literally we brought in Goat over a year or two or so ago. So we've had an influence. We've got a couple of influencer agencies that we've brought in, and one thing that we've definitely been seeing is this move where. Essentially, you used to have a lot of organic reach technically. It was considered organic reach because you were using an influencer. It was their organic audience that you were tapping into.
Yeah.
But now we've managed to put it into a way that it's become more performance media now. So it's now easier to put onto a plan. You're now able to kind of guarantee your impressions. You're able to guarantee your performance. So I think, yes, it is a bit of a new frontier for influencer, but not for everyone.
Is it like when the major labels signed all the punk bands?
Exactly, like punk had been happening and they just signed them. So we're doing a lot of that now within the networks, which is great. We're bringing them into the fold because I think they deserve to be in the fold. I think there is so much to be said for influencer or the creator economy. I think influencer doesn't capture it because anyone and everyone can influence. I've bought things on Instagram after just seeing one advert from one random person. I was just like, need it, buy it.
Do we not think there has to be an inflection point on the efficacy of influencer marketing? Because I think what makes it work really well is the authenticity behind it. It feels like it's someone. It feels like it's real. It feels like it's different to advertising, right? And obviously they've outlaid, I think it was $500 million that publicists paid for this. And how many people did you say? It was 3.5 million creators in there.
Correct.
Obviously there's a multiple in there. But at some point in time, in a sort of Gartner-esque hype cycle, aren't we at like the peak of this now, is there not going to be some sort of crash? Does this not wear off, this feeling of authenticity?
I think something new will come.
It depends on if they get all 3.5 million of them and make them live in a giant creator mansion together.
All right, Hugh Hefner.
I want the controversial opinions, but bloody hell, I can't ask bloody the Amir head for a quote and then I'll slag it off.
We're not slagging it off.
Look, come on, we're here. We're in the trenches. We're telling them how it is. I genuinely don't think we're at the... I think we are cresting a wave of creator stuff. I think what brought it to its prominence was the authenticity, as you're kind of saying, Charlie. But we are now into a point where we're having to plan it like regular programmatic social stuff. We need to put the same goals against it that we never really had to do before because we're able to measure more and they want to know exactly what they get from this. So I think at some point, to your point, it will crash in its previous form, but what it evolves into is yet to be seen.
Yeah, okay.
It's yet to be seen.
And I, for one, would like to congratulate Harriet's publicist overlords on their new acquisitions.
Right, that's what we want to hear. That's what we're keeping in.
And I'll just wipe that off my nose.
Yeah. Moving on, because we've got plenty more articles to get through. In social news and discussion website Reddit was reportedly outpacing TikTok, Facebook and Instagram on monthly time spent on platform. Recent data from Comscore Mobile Metrics shows growth on the platform in the summer. Facebook continues to lead in average monthly spent per user. So can we associate the rise with the need for more niche, authentic communities?
Definitely. Reddit's like, it's like a microcosm of like what the internet originally was. Everyone can find their little pocket that they belong to and join sort of r/cryptocurrency or r/role-playing games or whatever you want to join. But the thing is, in the UK, according to GWI, there's still only 3.2% of people who use it. So they're inevitably going to grow from that point as they start to kind of lean into their strengths. But, like, I think that their ad model is still a little bit behind some of the other platforms.
I'm definitely in that, was it 3.4% you said? I think I spend more time on Reddit than I do on Instagram.
Do you really?
I do, yeah, I do.
I didn't know you were a Reddit boy.
He's an admin on r/furries.
I told you not to tell anyone that. I think it's a really cool place, right? There, you have your mainstream sort of pictures and memes, but also it goes into much more depth. So anything you can really think of or any community you can have is being represented in there. And one thing that's interesting that separates it from your Instagrams or your TikToks is that the comments are as important as the content, because you have, it's a forum, like an old school Jack, as you're alluding to, an old school internet forum, right? And so you have the dwell time that you have on something can be extended much, much farther. So for that reason, I think that plays into why they're seeing that increase.
I'll tell you what I love about it. It's like if you're looking for little like bits of free qual when you're doing planning work, you can go into Reddit and just find whatever it is that you're planning or like the world that you're moving in and just read what people think about it. And then you can lift those opinions, put them as little quotes.
I've got to say one thing that was really funny. So Google have had a couple like ill-fated moves into the AI world. And one thing they did do is that they I can't remember if they bought it or they licensed all of Reddit's data. And what they did is, so when you search something on Google, it comes up with like an AI-suggested comment. Oh, and one of the things, and this is true, by the way, and I'll keep it light to start with, but if you were to Google, I feel depressed, the first thing it would reference was, there are many things you can do to try and deal with your depression. One Reddit user suggests jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. Oh, and that was legitimately the first thing that would come up on Google if you searched that. So, yeah, they had to tinker with that a little bit.
Well, now sounds like a great time to move to the next news article. In other social news, the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, an initiative by advertising trade group the WFA, known as the World Federation of Advertisers, for those incompetent fools who don't know, has had the chop.
Wait.
Incompetent fools?
Not in the script.
Or was it? But in short, it's had the chop following silly old Elon's antitrust lawsuit. So the initiative was led by major advertisers to create a safer, more responsible digital media environment and reduce harmful content on social media platforms. So the lawsuit by Elon claimed that members of the initiative colluded to harm X's revenue by withholding advertising.
Is this? I think you should be referred to as this full title of long-term nemesis of the podcast, Elon Musk.
I think we maybe had like three times we've spoken and not mentioned him.
Yeah.
He always comes up and I'm furious.
Can I just say, he did tell us all roundly as people who work in advertising to fuck off whilst wearing a leather jacket on a stage somewhere. So, I mean,
I think that's an appropriate response for anyone in advertising, but there we go.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any point in us all agreeing on everything all the time, so I'll offer a little flip point to it, where like, I agree that GARM's goals were good, but at the same time, if you do have a cabal or like a cartel that are influencing others, it's if any individual privately wants to talk to another individual privately, then that's fine if you say, I don't think you should be doing this. But when they're ganging up in this way, then there is a legitimate lawsuit against it. So I'm not suggesting that I'm on their
you're
side.
You're spiking my blood pressure.
Are you literally referring to an advertising trade group as a cartel?
Can I just say...
A good one, legally speaking.
I want to see Charlie start the Global Alliance of Irresponsible Media.
Okay.
This basically is
Charlie.
Yeah,
Charlie,
I was going to say that's essentially
I'm playing
this.
Devil's advocate here, but you know, obviously that they do good stuff, but I can see how that lawsuit wouldn't just immediately get thrown out.
But how the hell can you make the most unsafe environment for brands? Like, you literally said, anyone, do what you want here. Do what you want here. I don't care who you are.
You made a terrible
situation, and then you were upset when people stopped spending money. Like, I have clients who were spending on X and then stopped spending on X. I did not collude with anybody. But that's reason why you wanted GARM to be shut down? Stop it, please.
I mean, I've gone on record and said I would never put one of my clients on X because it's full of porn bots and,
it
like,
abuse and crazies.
It literally
happened to me. I had a really high-profile client and they were literally like, what's going on? I opened the thing.
Oh, no.
It was graphic pornography after graphic pornography.
Is that just your algorithm, though?
No. Oh, sorry, I was logged in.
I mean, at the moment, it's just all Temu.
Exactly.
We all have our opinions, I'm sure, on Temu as a product. But yeah, it's just that, and it's
crazy,
not a great environment to be in.
People were trying to spend on there. But either way, the victim mentality on it was getting my absolute goat.
Did you see the video from the CEO where she was like an angry school teacher vibe? And it's like this really sort of like, how dare you all collude? Like, and you can tell she's just like, right, I'm going to just chug that Kool-Aid and away we go.
Very good. Well, GARM, for those that are wondering, stands for Global Alliance for Responsible Media, because we keep referring to that, not the WFA. Anyway, moving on, in audio news, Bauer Media recently announced its new audio platform, Rayo. Rayo.
All day I've had this.
Rayo.
We can't stop her.
No, seriously, Rayo. Offering audiences one service to listen to more than 50 stations, hundreds of curated playlists and a range of on-demand content. Available as an app. Have you got the app?
It actually slapped. So I straight up downloaded the app and I want to be so for real because in my youth, I was a Kerrang girl.
Wait,
yeah, I was a Kerrang girl. I had the t-shirt.
I was a Kerrang boy.
I collected the magazines and I had a complete poster wall on my bedroom wall.
Nice.
And so when I got the app, I went straight to Kerrang and the first song that was playing was a song by Disturbed. And I said, my people are here.
Well, let's bring it back to Rayo, shall we?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's available as an app. Boogie's downloaded it, so it's obviously brilliant because Boogie's like a tech gal. On the web and smart speakers, it's the destination uniting all of Bauer's world-class audio with unique and relevant content for listeners and opportunities for advertisers, such as us. Bauer has a host of upcoming events this quarter across the UK, including Hits Live, Greatest Hits Radio, Live, Magic at the Musicals, Kiss Haunted House, and Absolute Radio Live. So let's hope we get an invite to all.
Now, this I actually really do like because in my current department, we do a lot of innovation and platforms. And sometimes I feel like people will focus on innovation. They'll be like, oh, yeah, yeah, innovation, AI, innovation, Web3. That's what we're doing. We're going to do all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, the nonsense.
But I really enjoy the way that they've actually listened to the people. They're giving the people what they actually want. I looked at all those events and I thought, I do hope I get an invite, actually. That seems interesting. And then also all of the, when I was on the app and I was going through all the different stations that you can get in, I thought, this is actually a bit fucking sick. I like this. I love my Spotify. Let me say that. Probably not what I'm supposed to say, but I do love my Spotify. But this is really, really fucking good in terms of the way that I can have my jazz radio. I will never go to Spotify and listen to jazz because I don't understand that. But this is someone curating it. And I'm like, I love that. There's someone doing this. Yeah. So yeah, really, really enjoy the way that they are using innovation in a slightly different way that doesn't necessarily have to be Gen AI every 2 minutes.
Well, there goes our chances of recording at Spotify.
Spotify, love me, please.
I was going to say, it's a good job you complimented Barrett at the end there because I saw her locking the door and they were just putting the thumb down. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of Bauer, it's new HQ that obviously we're in right now.
So shiny.
It is shiny. It's so nice, isn't it? But it's fitted throughout to accommodate the company's leading broadcasting operation, featuring production suites for multimedia output, including a photo studio for all of Charlie's nudes, and a live performing space.
Have they got a good lens?
I was going to say, I hope they've got a better lighting.
Yeah, it's fitting with the most powerful electron microscope in the country.
No, it's great here. I mean, everyone's very friendly and everything's so shiny and bright and new and it's a cool space.
The acoustic treatment. My ears are not used to this level of, like, treatment around them. It's fantastic.
Gorgeous.
I was going to say, I saw some
famous people on the way in. I saw Simon Mayo, who I had to explain who that was to Bookie. But
it was Mayo on Rayo.
Mayo, you can get Mayo on Rayo, I assume. Simon, you can have that one for free, mate.
Anyway, in network agency news, as quoted in the trade press, the Sky Media account leaves Essence Mediacom as its European media planning and buying agency. With who appointed in its place, do you know?
I thought you were going to say, obviously, the giant Pac-Man of publicists.
Well, Zenith, yeah. But I didn't want to say it myself.
It's fine. Yeah, it's all right. Well, they can't police me.
Independent media.
It's publicists from the top rope once again because they've had a big few wins in the last however long. I mean, Lego, L'Oreal, Sky.
If you are looking to advance your career in media right now, see if there's a job going a publicist because there probably is, and you could probably get a promotion out of it because they're going to be hiring like crazy.
I think you're going to want to hang on to the last piece.
Perhaps. Go on, Bookie, tell us the news.
No, please, host, tell us.
You tell me, I don't have it on the bloody script.
So, I don't know. The news just came out. I just saw it this morning in the industry news that WPP may have won the Amazon account in EMEA and APAC. someone else, I don't know who, has it in the Americas, but that's not my business. So
OMG, have it in the Americas.
I think you might also want to be having a look at WPP if you're looking for a new role slash promotion. Thank you kindly.
Go away, really, make her work with Bookie.
Who wouldn't? Maybe.
You don't have to work with her directly, though, just so you know.
Run as fast as you can.
The thing that I would say about it is, like, it's amazing for the people, for the companies that have won it, and, like, massive congratulations. But, like, when you're in one of those agencies and an account that big goes, it's a horrible feeling. And all of the people at the top of the pile will be fine. They will probably keep their jobs and they'll stay there. But loads of people will have to be 2P'd over to the new agency or they'll get made redundant. So if you're one of those people who's working on those accounts, and like there's a lot of good people working on the Sky account. I used to work on it back in like 2018, 2019. Like there's probably a lot of like soul searching going on. So it's kind of like it's a nice thing and it is, you know, great for publicists and stuff. But at the same time, like, you know, it's tricky times at Mediacom. And I think we need to be kind of sensitive to that in a way.
Well, that wraps up News Roundup. So remember, you can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories that we discuss on the podcast. Email us at info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com.
And I will endeavour to check that email address.
Well, anyway, on to our main topic. Us media folk are very, very good at talking about how we know our audiences. But what about our own? So, Jack, I know that you did some work on media consumption habits and behaviours of the ad people. So
the ad people.
The ad people, yeah. If that's what we refer to ourselves as.
Well, it's all to the village people, don't we?
No relation.
I'm kind of fascinated by the idea that, like, a lot, we don't really kind of know exactly what advertising people are like. Because there was this article that I read by a guy called Alex Morrow, which was released a couple of years ago, called Adland is an Island, and we'll include that within the show notes because you should read it. It's fascinating. Where he talks about, you know, how different people who work in advertising and media are to everyone else. We're not normal. And so when we try and, like, trust our gut instinct for what we think other people will think or do or how to influence them, it's, you know, it's not necessarily the best thing to do. Which reminded me also of a study from BBH Labs about group cohesion. So, like, how similar certain groups of people are. And I know that we always talk about, like, oh, Gen Z and oh, Gen Alpha, and, you know, how similar different generations are. And this basically proved, I mean, we'll include this in the show notes as well, but it proved that people who drink Orangina have more in common with each other than the entire group of millennials and also Gen Z.
Who else drinks Orangina in this room?
Only when I'm in France on holiday.
I was going to say, when I'm on holiday.
Goodness, it's so good. Friends. I love Orangina. It's so good.
Should we go for an Orangina after this?
Well, I mean, and also, like, Charlie's Lot, so daily nut eaters are included within this almost as much as...
Well, I'm sitting next to you, mate. You're within punching range.
I'm allergic anyway.
But the
so many ways.
So, but even more so than all of those put together, people who work in marketing and media are supposed to be the most similar. So, I've kind of got my TGI gloves on because apparently I can only handle it with gloves, and had a look at what the kind of average UK adult is like compared to people who work in advertising media. And I have a quiz for you all, so I'm going to don my gold sequined jacket.
So you've got gloves and a gold sequined jacket. Yeah. It's a shame this
I haven't told you about the shorts
video.
Yet.
Is there a prize?
Yeah, there is a prize. It is half a pint of lager shandy. If we can ever find our way out of the giant Bauer Media offices.
I'm so excited.
All of these are according to the most recent TGI survey, and we're comparing the average UK adult with people who work in advertising, marketing and media. So first question, what percentage of people who work in advertising and marketing are willing, I'll tell you what, you're very good at reading off a script. are willing to pay a premium subscription to avoid having ads served to them?
I go high.
Yeah. You can see the
76.
Answers.
76. I'm not looking, Jack.
I'm going to go high because I feel like I am the other side. I will never pay to have an ad blocker because I want to see the full experience. I want to know how the people I'm advertising to are receiving ads.
You don't have
but I do feel it. Like a lot of people. So I'm going to say 56%.
Okay.
I'm going to say lower because I've got faith in our industry, but I also appreciate that some people just want a break from ads. maybe 40.
Okay, so you're all wrong, but Harriet, you are closest. The average person is 22%. So just over a fifth of people will pay a premium subscription to avoid ads. But it's higher for us. Our industry are willing to pay more. So a third of people. And that makes us 35% more likely than average to pay to avoid advertising.
We're talking
Spotify premium. We're talking...
And only a third of people buy in the advertising world buy Spotify premium.
Bookie's just realised that she has Spotify premium and she will pay to avoid advertising. Yes. So there you go.
And I might even upgrade my Amazon
Prime video. Shame.
Okay. Very good. Question two. So 1-0 to Harriet. What percentage of people who work in advertising think that podcasts offer a trusted and authentic voice?
100%. 100%.
101%.
What percentage of people who work in advertising? Yes, yeah. So you think everyone in advertising thinks that this right now...
99.9%.
This right now is trusted
this
and authentic.
This is the most trustworthy thing I've ever heard.
Very good. Okay.
I'll go for a solid 50.
Solid 50.
No, my serious answer is probably 60.
Okay. Can anyone guess what the average person thinks?
I would guess 65. More. More?
Give me numbers. Yeah. Numbers.
I would guess 66.
Wrong.
Wrong.
48.
Wrong.
Okay. No, just
okay.
say.
So 21% of people think that podcasts offer a trusted and authentic voice. Ooh. So it's really not that many. And then people who work in media, it's higher. So we trust it a bit more, 36%. But it's still not that high. So we're 69% more likely to think this than the average person.
At least our audience is media people. So
I mean, I would say that if you were to ask them about the Media Freak podcast, that number would be, off the charts.
I know this is a quiz and we're not really supposed to be giving points of views on this, but
no,
I do feel like that is a bit of a... It shows the lag that we've got with the podcast industry in general. I think people are really kind of behind on their support of it as a format.
Yeah.
People are so easy and so happy to trust TV, radio, all those things. But podcast is still emerging, which in my mind is nuts. I think it's everyone I speak to listens to a podcast. Everyone I speak to trusts a podcast.
But you work in media in London. You're probably way more likely to...
I don't hang out with you guys all the time, though.
You live in Windsor. Sorry, that podcast hotspot.
With the spiders. Book is scared of the spiders
in Windsor.
This is
why I don't tell you guys anything. Next question.
Okay. What percentage of the UK population, so not people who are in advertising, we're going to go first with normal people, feel bombarded by advertising?
It's got to be a lot, isn't it? I mean, what's the statistic? You see like 3,000 ads a day or something silly like that? Well, it depends how many people
recognise
it. I reckon
75% of people feel, regular people feel bombarded by ads.
Okay.
I've been going way too high, so I'm going to go lower. I'm going to say 54.
Okay.
I'm going to say 56.
Interesting. You've got it by two, Charlie. So it's 51% of the of average people feel bombarded by advertising. And do you know what? It's really not that different with advertising people. It's 49%. So... everyone's kind of feeling it. Just about half of people feel bombarded by advertising. I mean, there's, you know, maybe we need to be doing a little bit
Let's
more.
Let's increase those frequencies, guys. Come on.
People aren't feeling it enough.
Branded entertainment.
So what percentage of us being advertising people, would agree that money is the best measure of someone's success?
Oh, God. You're really opening a can of worms here for me.
There's a lot of egos in there.
Yeah, there is. But if we were all about money, then we wouldn't be in media. We'd be in, like, fintech. Yeah.
I'm sorry, so this was regular people or advertising people?
This is advertising people.
I feel like advertising people feel like money is the main measure of success. I would say maybe 68%.
Sorry, what's the other measure of success? Happiness?
Well, no, it's just money is the best measure of success. So it could be, you know, it could also be measured by the amount of fruit baskets you're delivered on a daily basis, but obviously that's not the way you do it.
Or having a nice, stable family.
Well, I mean, look, so 28% of people who work in advertising think that money is the best measure of success.
Really?
That's fine.
But there's 43% of us are only going to work for the money. Which I think means that there's 57% of people who are in it for the lunches.
Well, anyway, well, thank you very much for that, Jack. Moving on.
You're so welcome.
Who won?
Oh, yeah, who won? None of us.
I feel like I won.
Well done for taking part.
I think probably Harriet.
Do I?
Yeah.
Did I?
Well done for
you. You're the boss.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So here we go. Forgive me, Buki, for I have sinned. You tell us what is on Media and On this week.
So we've got a couple. We've got a couple through, which is nice. The first one is short and sharp. This person says, what is if agencies briefing us with a one-day turnaround? No more context.
I can really, really resonate to that as a media owner. Yeah, it's tough. And sometimes not even a full day. I mean, it's quite aggressive. I mean, look, we're all busy people. Of course, we are. It's hard enough to get us all sat in one room. We know that. But the days where there would be, you know, even like 3 or 4 days, that's enough to actually put some quality work together, right? And it's, we want to do really good work for you guys. We want to give you the best scenario possible. And when we're put under that kind of that constraint, I feel like it doesn't help us or you. Mm. And look, I know you guys are obviously going to be under the same pressures as well. Everything is a waterfall. Mm. But maybe we need to push back up the waterfall, maybe 1 or 2 or 3 levels.
I definitely want to, because when I read this one, I was like, I can't even comprehend that. I would never brief out a partner if I've only got a one-day turnaround. I'm going to use what I've already got, use what I know about the partners I know about,
yeah.
And then maybe I might ask you 1 or 2 questions. So for anyone who's out there who might be briefing partners with a one-day turnaround, please don't. I think that's a bit mean. I think you must have enough experience in your own job just to put something together. And if you have to ask them a couple of questions and say, we've had a really quick brief turnaround, I don't want to brief you fully, but I just need you to answer a couple of questions so I can feed it in and we'll come back. Maybe try that. That's probably would be my take on that.
I don't disagree, but I feel like lots of clients have different cultural ways of working, and sometimes that is just how they operate. So, yeah, I do think we have to be mindful of how we work with others, but also mindful of the other side as well.
You can't do it at like a constant rate, though. You can't be like doing it every single time, like once or twice, which is why you've got to, I mean, it feeds into the whole thing that we've discussed plenty of times amongst the four of us around, like, why you have to build good relationships with your friends who work in media owners, because then you're going to be able to ask them for that favour when it happens. But it's the whole culture of, like, particularly when I was at big agencies, where it's that expectation of, like, oh, you're the media owner, you serve me, you will get me some more drinks, oh, go to the bar. And, you know, poor Charlie's there with his crumbling Amex from just being, you know, he can't get rid. So it's like you've got to try and be nicer people, just be a better person.
I agree. And I just feel like we should be setting the example that we want to see.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm getting a one-day turnaround from a client, especially if it's an account that we already hold, I will push back and be like, that SLA is not going to work. If it's once in a while, fair enough. However, it's not every 2 minutes. I can't do that, because you're actually tarnishing your own reputation within the industry. Media owners will stop replying to you. They will stop doing favours for you if you carry on doing stuff like this. So for anyone who is doing this, I would definitely just pare it back a little bit. Let's be nice. We're all friends here.
Yeah.
For those that can't see me, I'm smiling right now. Yeah.
the vein that was popping on his forehead has gone down now.
That's because I'm banking on one of those crumbling Amex drinks.
Go on, what's next?
Okay, so this one actually, and it feeds back into what we were talking about earlier. So it says, our agency has just lost a big pitch and I'm a bit worried for my job in the near future. Any advice for the job hunt?
Come speak to you, apparently.
Yeah, I think hopefully, because there's not enough of us to do the work we've currently got, so I'm sure we'll be bringing people in. But I think maybe having a look at the agencies who might have won new business would be a definite good place to start on stuff like that. And then alternatively, and there's just an account that I follow a lot of, so Media Lad on Instagram, you've seen him?
Yeah.
I have, yes.
Yeah, big fans of Media Lad.
Legend of the game.
Yeah, legend of the game. He often will put up roles that he hears, because he's got his ear to the ground. So any roles that kind of come up. So I would follow Media Lad on Instagram and just see what he's saying.
Just to add, we're very sorry that you're feeling like that, because you know it's not a nice situation. But hope is around the corner. This is media; you'll find something.
One thing I would advise, having looked at a lot of cover letters recently for job applications to craft, write your own cover letter, or at least edit your AI cover letter that you got to write. Because seriously, the amount of cover letters which is just like, this is pure AI. And all you got to do is sprinkle a little bit of your own personality in it. Like, back yourself and talk about yourself in a human way. You don't have to overly professionalize it to the nth degree that you sound like a robot. Because if you've not used AI and you still sound like a robot, then, you know, we're all doomed, aren't we?
We've got problems.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Very good. Any more books or is
one last one, if we've got time for it.
Yep.
One last one. Okay, so this one says, not a problem, but more of a hot take.
Oh, no.
Okay. Right, I think that the day-to-day client leadership functionality is redundant. I agree it's needed at higher levels. They've put brackets C-suite. But day-to-day, most clients want to talk to the people doing the work, and the people doing the work want to hear the brief direct from the client. That is a hot take. Please know that that was Media Anon. No one's viewing the room.
I mean, I bloody hope it's not, because I'm going to be out of a job soon.
Hurry, fight for your job now.
Oh, that's spicy.
Well, okay, first of all, client leadership may be misleading because you're not necessarily always talking to the client. You're doing a lot in the background to make sure the team is functioning how it should to service the client. So I think this individual maybe needs to recognise that client leadership goes beyond just talking to the client on a status call about stuff. It sounds like the one that she's got, if it's a she or they or he, maybe not doing their job as effectively.
I was going to say, it sounds like whoever's doing that role that they currently work with just isn't doing it properly, because a good client leadership or like account handler should be the kind of string that holds it all together. Like, without that, things fall apart. They should be offering the buyer's protection so that they're not kind of, you know, having to answer directly to the client when they forgot to turn on the frequency cap.
Yeah, or whatever. I agree. I think I can kind of see where they're coming from, because I have worked in different spaces where potentially there has been a breakdown in communication. You know, you get a brief from somebody, you present it back to the client, and they're like, that's not what we asked for. And then you're like, wait, so where has the communication broken down? So I can kind of, if I put myself in those shoes, I can see where they're coming from. But as I'm sitting next to Harriet, I don't believe that is true.
It's a not take for me.
It's not a cold take.
Not take.
It's a cold take. That's
not
a cold take. Not cold as in, like, good cold either. Like, just, no.
Oh, these bloody lingo now, eh?
I know. There's so much slang.
Well, nice. Very good, Bookie. Thank you very much for that. And that wraps up today. Thank you very much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you liked listening to our freak this week, remember to like, subscribe, and tell your friends. So keep your Media Anon stories coming in, and we'll be back in 2 weeks in another location right at the heart of the media scene. And big thanks to Bauer.
Ooh, thank you very much, Bauer,
for hosting us this week. Now, who's up for an Orangina?
Let's go.
Only if the Crumbling Amex is buying it.
Okay, Amex. I love that one. I'm going to get that partnership going.
The Media Freak podcast is a Gimme Sugar production.